хлеб пулем я, тун шепча идиш ниген, а руни резал штил, нор стуэн де гризал зих миден. А руми резал штил, нор стуэн де гризал зих миден. Хармон зих ман фрейлах штету, верот эс лидги кэн. Jetzt dieses Pusten Menschen, oi seinen die Stieber farberen. Nors is do a reute armei.
Welcome to Davening After Dark, the Minyan's patrons-only episode, our bonus content for the month of February. Getting it up this time with a few days to spare, unlike last time where it was the very end of the month. This month, a whole lot of shit has gone down. And so before we get into any of our content for you lovely, lovely patrons, whomst we love so very much. Talia, do you want to tell, actually, I guess we should do the usual intro. So I am Yaakov.
Oh, yeah.
And I am drinking coffee out of my Star Trek mug while wearing an X-Files t-shirt. Because I am a fucking loser.
Oh, wait till you hear this. I am drinking coffee out of my Don't Talk to Me Until I Have Had My Respected Stalin Juice mug. Wearing a Stone Cold Steve Austin hoodie, yes, and Teen Wolf t-shirt. The movie, not the TV show. Let's keep that.
Oh, right, excellent.
And my Juche sweatpants.
Dang.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I didn't mention I'm in my Adidas tracksuit also. So we are styling. We are fucking vibing right now. Prez, vibe check.
I am Prez. I seem to be a DLC character for the Minyan. And I'm drinking water in a Jar Jar Binks t-shirt.
Yo!
Yes. No.
I don't know if he could be on this podcast.
Purple pajama pants.
Nice.
But is Jar Jar Binks on those pajama pants?
Unfortunately, no.
How dare you support that guy?
Oh, God.
Jar Jar is probably the best character in episode one.
Actually, you know what? I think that's true, but I think it says a very different thing about episode one than you're saying it says.
Actually, let me rephrase that. Jar Jar is the second best character because the first best one brings Jewish representation to the Star Wars.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what Watto to think about. It's too early for this.
Prez, what's your line on sand?
I hate it.
It gets everywhere, you know?
It gets everywhere and it's coarse.
Hey, God.
I will be honest. As somebody who absolutely detests the prequels, but as someone who grew up in a beach town, I really, really fucking resonated with the hatred of sand. Okay. It does get everywhere. You cannot clean that shit off.
I can't.
But I am.
I am
an original trilogy diehard.
Oh yes.
So sorry, Prez.
Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie.
Rogue One is not an original trilogy, though.
I'm talking about all in Star Wars.
Oh no, I am like, I mean, I have things that I like and dislike about the new ones, but I only hold the original trilogy as sacred. I'm a dogmatist when it comes to Star Wars.
You hate to see it.
I know. I'm sorry.
You hate to see it.
We do not have a coherent party line on Star Wars in the Minyan.
Yeah, the sequels are the best ones. I'm sorry.
Wow. So Prez is out here representing like the Star Wars posadists.
The absolute best takes.
Dolphins, it's Jar Jar Binks. Did you know Jar Jar Binks' dad owned a whaling company?
What?
What?
Oh my god. His
Jar Jar Binks' dad is named George Binks, and he owned a whaling company.
Among
I didn't. Oh, I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah. How he like they like got shipwrecked at one point, and his dad hated Jar Jar so much he tried to kill himself.
Is this some like
Jar Jar? He didn't deserve.
Is this some expanded universe prequel stuff?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that is a very natural segue to our expanded universe that we're going to introduce later, I guess. Woof. Yes. All right. So now that we spent the first 10 minutes arguing about Star Wars, I guess we should get serious. So, Talia, do you want to tell us a brief rundown of the absolute madness that has been happening over the past month?
Sure. So, Mignon, and along with the other podcasts that were related to Pearls of the Round Table, have decided to no longer associate our podcasts with Pearls of the Round Table due to two individuals in Pearls of the Round Table basically embezzling money and being abusive. And so that all happened this week, and we have gotten a different Discord server, and this time it's not based on whether or not you're a patron. So if you want the link, just hit us up on our different social media platforms, which now we're called The Mignon. So on Twitter, we're at @_Mignon.
It's the same on Patreon, I think. I also can't believe it's only been a week. Holy shit. I definitely thought this took place over more than 1 week. And then it, yeah.
It's been a week. Oh, yeah, because today's Monday. Yeah, it's been a week.
There are months where nothing happens, and there are weeks where months happen, apparently. But yeah, so the Patreon, like the Twitter, is patreon.com/the_Mignon. So that matches the Twitter.
Okay.
But yeah, on Anchor, it's the-Mignon on the URL. So anchor.fm/the-Mignon, the-Mignon. If you just search for Mignon, M-I-N-Y-A-N on Anchor, you'll find it. And yeah, it should be, if the name hasn't already updated in your various podcast feeds, it should within the next few days. But yeah, so name change, that's a thing. Same old group, same old lines.
Again, like if you want the Discord link, just message us. Just because we are doing the anti-Zionist, like Marxist-Leninist, Jewish, legit Mignon on Sundays on the Discord. So we have our voice chat that we do that at. So yeah, now there's like no money barrier to get on the Discord.
Hell yeah. That's great. Oh. I didn't actually know that that was how we were structuring the Discord now, so that's exciting. All right, so thank you, Talia, for laying that out there. If people want to know more info, there's the public statements up at pearlspod.com. But yeah, that is the Mignon, now formally known as The Mignon, not Pearls of. That's our line. All right, moving on. We have some evil eye for us today. Prez, you said you wanted to read one of the articles that we're going to do for this one?
I can read one.
Excellent.
So, Amazon offers free delivery to illegal Israeli settlements, charges Palestinians.
Oh, geez. This is going to be.
This is going to be good.
Yep.
Is that what you're going to say?
I'm already cringing. This is going to hurt. I hate it.
E-commerce giant says free shipping discount is also available to Palestinians if they select Israel as their country.
Oh, God.
What the fuck?
I'm just going to read the full paragraph because it's all redundant.
Yeah, but no, Amazon don't feel like you need to read this whole thing.
Shipping to customers in illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank while charging Palestinian fees as much as $24 when they list the Palestinian territories as their country.
What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
The U.S. retail giant said on Friday that the free shipping promotion was also available to Palestinians if they amended their addresses and selected Israel as their country.
What? I'm literally shaking. What the fuck? I fucking hate. God damn it.
Let's get down to their statements.
Jesus.
This does not include the Palestinian territories, as we cannot guarantee the high standard of delivery experience Amazon customers expect.
Oh my fucking God. Oh my God.
The spokesman added that the issue lies in deliveries having to go through customs and additional inspections at the Israeli-controlled border than having to be handed over to another local delivery operator.
Sure. Sure it does. That's definitely the reason, you know. That's it.
This is so gross.
It's definitely purely logistical. It's not ideological at all. Sure, Amazon.
On Wednesday, the United Nations released a list of 112 companies with businesses tied to Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, which is a violation of international law.
Mm.
Airbnb, Booking.com, Motorola, and TripAdvisor are among the various companies on the list. Amazon was not named in that report.
Oh, fuck.
That's weird.
What the fuck? I didn't catch that when I saw that list. I mean, that list coming out is awesome, but How in the fuck is Amazon not listed?
I'll explain that in a second because I figured it
out. Oh, my God.
Amazon is essentially incentivizing Palestinians to choose Israel as their address to get a free shipping deal. Corporations like Amazon need to be held accountable for such abhorrent practices, and we're talking with partners now to see how to do that. And this was the communications director for Jewish Voice for Peace, Granite Kim.
Hmm.
So Amazon got around being listed by the UN because it didn't enter the Israeli market until after the UN conducted its report.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
How convenient.
God fucking damn it.
So you can't be a war criminal or you can't support war crimes if you don't start doing the war crimes or selling to war criminals until after the report is finished.
Of course. Oh, God almighty. I'm like literally fucking sick to my stomach. This is the same shit that Google pulled with Google Maps last year.
Oh, yeah.
Where they just literally did not list Palestinian territories or anything like Gaza, West Bank. They just listed it all as Israel. They didn't show the borders. They didn't show fucking nothing. They just showed everywhere as Israel. So it would say on Google Maps, like Bethlehem, Israel, which is just.
Yeah.
Fuck. I hate
it. It's so gross.
I fucking hate it.
Even if they were still calling it Israeli territory and still charging everyone $24, that would still be awful.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But like,
the salt in the wound.
Mm-hmm.
Of
Jesus
the
yeah Christ.
Yeah, I like the framing from Granite Kim, which shout out JVP, like, yeah, incentivizing Palestinians to identify their home as Israel, like it's that extra little nudge of legitimizing this fucking bullshit settler state.
It's part of cultural genocide,
yes.
Too. It's fucking disgusting.
And because it's
like what they do to occupied Ireland, where they have to say they're part of the UK instead of Ireland.
Yep. And it's not even Ireland. It's Northern Ireland, UK.
Right.
Mm.
And all of these fucking cities are called like they're renamed to like Londonderry instead of Derry.
Yeah. Or
all of that shit. And you have that stuff happening in Palestine.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Where you have places renamed or their names just erased.
Mm-hmm.
This is just awful.
Yeah.
So you got another one?
Yeah, got some more. I'm not going to read all of this one because, well, you'll see. So this is from the JC, which I'm not familiar. Not Jewish Currents. Jewish Currents rules. Yeah. No, this is some other JC that I'm not even, like, familiar with. What the fuck does this even stand for? It's just called the JC. What the fuck? Who Jewish are you?
Jewish Chronicle.
Jewish Chronicle. Okay, so this is not Jewish Currents. This is the Jewish Chronicle. And
it's a London-based Jewish newspaper from the 1840s.
Sorry, you said London-based?
Yeah.
Mm.
The oldest continuously published Jewish newspaper in the world.
Wow.
Oh.
Well, let's see what they have to say.
This is going to be good.
Oh, yeah. Get ready for this. This is by David Aberbach. The Great Marxist Lie About Jew Hate. That's a hell of a fucking headline. Okay, the byline here. Loyal Marxists today maintain that the true version of the ideology is free of anti-Semitism. A closer look at Russian history after the 1917 revolution debunks this claim. With particularly strong evidence from writers including Ahad Ha'am, Isaac Babel, Boris Pasternak, Osip Mandelstam, and Peretz Markish, none of whom I have read, although I know that Ahad Ha'am was like the cultural Zionist guy who got sidelined by the political Zionists when he started saying that we should, you know, maybe not be dispossessing Palestinians of their land and should instead just like move to Israel and like just be involved in the local community. So, not, yeah, whatever.
Even doing Zionism poorly gets sidelined.
Exactly. Yep.
Do you want Diet Zionism? No, I want absolutely not. Zionism.
Absolutely not. Yeah, he was too nice to the people he was colonizing, and so he was maligned as you know, against the cause. thanks, Ben Gurion.
Right.
So back to the article here. Though the Russian Revolution of 1917, carried out in the name of Karl Marx, no, it wasn't, led to a ban on anti-Semitism, hatred of Jews and contempt for Judaism were widespread among socialists. This article is not going to mention that a lot of the hatred for quote-unquote Judaism was carried out by actual Jews in the Soviet Union who just disagreed on points of religion. Marx identified Judaism with the hated capitalist system. No, he didn't. An antisocial force of alienation. Quote unquote, real emancipation meant doing away with Judaism. Marx's anti-Semitic prejudices were later cited with relish by the Nazis, including Hitler. No, they weren't. You can listen to our earlier episode on the Jewish question to see how all of those things are wrong. I'm sure Tim would be ripping his own skin off. He's so angry after having heard this. But basically, Marx identified Judaism with money. It was when he started understanding how capitalism functions that he drops any sort of mention of Jews as the like money agents behind society type nonsense, because he starts to understand that, oh wait, it's capitalism. So the idea that he equated Judaism with the capitalist system is wrong, because once he diagnosed the capitalist system, he stopped focusing on Jews really in any way. So,
and like I learned, so when I was taking theory, when I was taking theory in undergrad, I mean like a class on theory. I had a class on Marx, and we had to read the 18th Brumaire.
Yeah.
Where he talked about the Jews. And that was when he was talking about like political liberation and the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And how political liberation is stupid.
Are you sure that wasn't on the Jewish question? Because that's a lot of, that's the main focus of that too, is how like bourgeois emancipation is horseshit. It should be striven for as a step forward, but it's not going to solve anything, really.
Oh, yeah. That was on the Jewish question.
Yeah.
All these names fucking get mixed up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he talks about it in multiple places. Everywhere across his writings, he is a strident supporter of Jewish emancipation in the, like, Napoleonic system of that, which is what people were arguing about, and also pointing out this is not going to solve the prejudice against Jews, which, correct.
Yeah. And his whole point was, before he was talking necessarily about how we need to abolish capitalism to get to full liberation, it was that the liberation of Jews isn't going to come from political liberation necessarily. It's going to come from economic liberation first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to reach political liberation from there. And that was when he was still talking about like Jewish money and all of that shit. Right. So like he was still talking about like he was still being kind of anti-Semitic and then still talking about how the Jews are going to be liberated.
Yes.
So like at the base, he was still interested in liberation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the basic.
Not doing it very well.
Right. Right. And that's basically the like thing that Tim and I settled on in our episode where we like went through on the Jewish question and his other writings tangential to that. All right. So moving on, where they, you know, admit how wrong they are in many respects. Even so, the revolution brought Russian Jewish emancipation and equal rights, abolished the Pale of Settlement, outlawed anti-Semitism. Stalin rejected anti-Semitism as cannibalism, though he himself could be described as a cannibal. Sure, article. And brought unrestricted admission of Jewish pupils to Russian schools. That sounds so anti-Semitic. The collapse of traditional Jewish... Yeah, right? So awful, all these things that you just described. The collapse of traditional Jewish society was hastened by the emergence of the Russian atheist state, which, okay, sure, I guess, but also, like, all the Jews in that emergent Russian atheist state continued to be Jewish and participated in it, whatever. They admit that the Red Army refrained from pogroms while the White Army committed anti-Jewish atrocities in the Civil War. And even like this is one of those articles where they'll just admit all the good stuff and then still claim like, oh, but it was anti-Semitic because people living in the society were anti-Semitic. I don't want to read any more of this. It's fucking stupid.
Okay. Kill people, but they were mean. Well, they didn't kill them.
Yeah, like some people on the ground were still shitty. Yeah, no shit. So I guess like I just wanted to read the intro, but all of the issues addressed in this are answered in various of our episodes, like Talia's episode. You know, Stalin was a mensch on the PRT and the variety of our episodes. So fuck this JC. Only Jewish Currents is the real JC.
Yeah,
most of the time. It's like a 70% right, 30% wrong kind of deal with them. But hey, you know, that's a passing grade. I give plenty of decent students C-.
America.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's see. That's it for Evil Eye. Now we're going to introduce a new segment that we are calling The Spiel, which is Yiddish, but I mean, people have probably heard it used colloquially. It's just like, you know, you talk your shit, you kind of say your piece, and it's usually a little bit glib, a little bit kind of mixed between like it's like a fun rant sort of deal. Like, oh, that's my spiel. So.
You just did a spiel on a spiel.
Whoa. Meta spiel. All right. So the way this segment is going to work is this is going to be a chance for one of the Mignon hosts to kind of just go off on a subject that either is not quite large enough for a whole episode or is a little bit outside the purview of our kind of Jewish-centered lens of things. And our very first spiel is going to be delivered by our newest member, Prez. Prez, what are you going to be telling Talia and I and our listeners about today?
I am going to be delivering a spiel on critical support and how no one does it right.
I am prepared to self-crit because I am also probably definitely not doing it right. Spiel away.
I've practiced this spiel many times, especially with everything that happened with Iran, and then it started happening with China a little bit. But then really after the U.S., killed General Soleimani, and then there was all that leftist Twitter discourse, and then discourse on multiple discords, and discourse in real life with a bunch of MLs upholding Soleimani and Iran as these bastions of anti-imperialism. And you get that some, and we even got that in certain leftist organizing groups that I won't name. But it was reactionary because there's a large amount of things that either the general himself or Iran or whatever fucking country or group or person that we're talking about have done that are bad. Like when we talk about the Soviet Union, they haven't done everything right. Like walking back on gay rights isn't a good thing.
Right.
So when we say critical support, we don't mean we unflinchingly support every single thing that they've done. But when something bad happens in current times, there's a reaction to the US or Western imperialism that seems to utterly erase what either a general or a country has done or currently does to its own people or to other countries. And it mixes up getting rid of America as the priority with America's completely evil and everything that is being told about these groups is a lie because of it. So we're losing the thread of critical support and moving into the territory of support.
Right.
So there were a lot of Soleimani was a total hero, or Iran is the bastion of anti-imperialism in the Middle East. And that was not really critical support. That was full-on unironic support of the country and the now dead general.
So,
but that's not really good.
Okay, so just to by way of example, so I definitely saw a lot of people who, even if they weren't saying like I agree with everything Soleimani did right explicitly, there was a lot of people focusing on like Soleimani was the one leading the forces that kept ISIS at bay. And there was like a lot of focus on his work fighting ISIS. Would you categorize the kind of emphasis on those actions as veering too hard into uncritical support?
So there's a so like when you're arguing with libs, like when you're arguing with like a Democrat or Republican, leaning that hard into things can kind of be useful. but like leaning that hard and saying like they were the only, like Soleimani was the only person he single-handedly rolled back ISIS.
Right.
Like one that presents too hard of uncritical support of him, but that also presents a mischaracterization of what was going on in the Middle East itself. But also he didn't really do, he did a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
And my point is not to say that like we should be absolving him or kind of absolving what the U.S. did, because we should never absolve what the U.S. did. But the uncritical or the very supportive roles that a lot of MLs sometimes take can alienate the groups of people that we're trying to organize with.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you are trying to organize Iranians and you're talking about how great Iran and Soleimani are, that's not really going to go over very well.
Right.
Or if you're trying to organize Iraqis or Libyans and you're talking about how great Saddam or Gaddafi were, you might not really have a good time.
Yeah, you mentioned that certain organizational groups were kind of following this line, and at a protest in Boston, that this actually came up, where there was discussion of a variety of like protest movements in the Middle East over the past several years, and there was a lack of mention of protest movements within Iran, and an Iranian comrade left the demonstration. And his partner voiced, later in like a debriefing discussion that, this, you know, this Iranian, person had felt a lot of discomfort because there hadn't been that kind of admittance of, like wrongdoing on the part of the Iranian government and like people agitating for change of the Iranian government, not in a kind of like, agitating for imperialist intervention, but for like internal change and like not addressing the complexity. And like this person literally walked out of a demonstration. So that's like kind of on the, like on the individual level, exactly what you're talking about, like alienating these communities within, within our communities.
Yeah. Like imperialism makes things really complex globally, and uncritically supporting China or Iran or Iraq or Venezuela can alienate everyone when you're trying to organize, or even it, and just theoretically it gives you an incorrect view of things, because when you're just reading modern history and past history, Iran's not, and it was never an anti-imperialist country, and China has some really bad foreign policy.
Yeah.
Like
supporting Duterte, yada yada.
Yeah, like uncritical support's not very helpful in most fashions, unless you're talking to like a Republican, in which case they don't really have that room for nuance.
So I guess, but that then begs the question, so thinking about this in terms of, you know, at the organizational level, or people, you know, using a platform, how does one account for the fact that people who don't have that, like you said, that kind of that room for nuance or that ability to kind of think through the complexity, the people who are not, you know, educated enough or aware enough politically to, I don't mean educated formally, right? Just like, you know, who have looked into political economy and things like that. How do you account for that? The fact that there are people who will use the nuance of, you know, a critical support and like use it to bolster imperialist ends. Because this is like the counter argument that I've heard is like, if you focus on the nuance, then what you end up doing functionally is boosting the portions of your nuance argument that align with the imperialist hegemonic narrative, and mm-hmm. your support gets kind of washed out. And that's like the argument I've heard from the other side of like the debate about like how nuanced we should be. Right. Which I think is really kind of what you're getting at. What would you say in response to that?
Like the call for making sure you're actually having critical support is not that difficult, because I've had plenty of conversations with people from the Global South and people not from the Global South who actually have critical support of these countries, and they're not saying like, well, it's really complex, both countries are bad, and we all shrug.
Right.
It's like Iran, or I'll just stop using Iran, like Venezuela.
Like Venezuela,
Venezuela has had economic problems, and it has issues with healthcare, and it has issues socially. But all of those issues are underpinned by the fact that the U.S. imperialism and U.S. foreign policy are either directly causing them or exacerbating them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it can't get certain kinds of food. It can't get certain kinds of medicine. It can't get certain types of education, or just outright can't get food, medicine, healthcare, building materials, education materials, or other things because of American actions. And for whatever problems that Venezuela has or that Venezuela is doing and causing, it's in response, or it's directly caused by the U.S. So we have to combat the U.S. to overcome whatever is going on in Venezuela.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
It's critical support of Venezuela, but it's still understanding that Venezuela has its problems, and that's pivoting whatever issues that people you're organizing with or people you're talking to raise about Venezuela.
Okay. So if we're okay, so in that case, sorry, I'm just like thinking things through. So like I am probably wrong or like very vulgar in my approach to this. I feel a much higher level of support for Venezuela than I do for Iran, for instance. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like a higher level of support for, I don't know, China versus Syria. So how do we, as principled Marxist-Leninists, distinguish between, I guess, countries that in the final analysis are attempting to build some form of socialism but are impeded by U.S. imperialism, and like they have their problems, but on like I would say on balance Venezuela is doing a good job and is like doing the best they can. That feels very different from the kind of critiques of Iran, for instance. I mean, I know we're kind of harping on that example, but we could use, you know,
we could use Syria,
we could use Russia, you mm-hmm. know, like Russia under capitalist restoration. Some people have also veered into like critical support land for Russia. Yeah.
As
part of like,
have not seen that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've seen it. I don't agree with it, but,
oh God.
But in terms of like Russian support for Syria, or, you know, like Russian backing of different other anti-imperialist struggles, yada, yada. So like, I guess, what is there a functional difference? And if so, what, between critically supporting a progressive nation that has shortcomings versus critically supporting a reactionary nation that is aligned against U.S. imperial interests?
So critically supporting a progressive / socialist nation is good, and you should do that. But critically supporting a reactionary nation is, I guess, the fundamental contradiction that we were touching on originally, mm-hmm. where, like, for whatever people pretend Iran, like, some people say that Iran is socialist, and no, some people say that
it is not.
Yeah.
It is not. It is not.
Some people say that Syria is socialist. It is not.
No.
And then, like, people say that, like, Syria, Iran, Libya, when Gaddafi was in control, Russia, and you can keep naming countries, like, all of these countries are anti-imperialist because they're doing stuff in opposition to the U.S. But what they're doing in opposition to the U.S. is because they're excluded from the U.S. hegemony. Like, if we looked at when Russia first left communism, and it the Soviet Union broke up, RIP, they tried to enter European markets, they tried to enter the global market with U.S. support, and then they moved into their own kind of sphere.
Right.
After the West excluded them. And then they became more antagonistic because they had to carve out a place of their own. And then Iran and Syria have also done the same thing, where they are working within their own sphere and defending their own interests, specifically because the West is antagonistic towards them. And you mm-hmm. have China, who is doing that too and is more successful. But China's socialist, so it's a little bit of a different story for them.
Sure.
But it's still the same concept, that the anti-imperialism that Iran and Syria and Libya before, when they were under Gaddafi, and Russia, their anti-imperialism was specifically because they had to defend their own interests. So when they do something, it's very measured, and it's less to further a Marxist project and more to make sure that they can survive to have their own capitalist class.
Right. It's the national bourgeoisie.
Yeah, the national bourgeoisie is acting to ensure that they are able to retain their own money and power and capital.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are doing critical support for them, we're not really critically supporting any leftist movement. We're critically supporting the national bourgeoisie continuing to exist.
Mm-hmm. And if I understand it right, from a Marxist-Leninist perspective and from a decolonial perspective, the function of supporting critically, a national bourgeois movement is to weaken the chains of imperialism so that a proletarian movement can arise within those spaces. Is that right?
Yeah. So that's the Mao did that concept of aligning temporarily with the national bourgeoisie to overthrow the Japanese imperialist interests and then kick out the national bourgeoisie, right, and then wage a revolution. The issue here, though, is that there's not much of a left in Iran or Russia or Syria.
Right. They've been pretty thoroughly purged.
And the ones that exist are so anti-regime that they will work with the West. Which is not good.
Yeah.
And that, like, that's their, I mean, it's everyone's problem, because the empire is global, and, like, I'm not really blaming them, because I totally understand where they're coming from. But the idea that we should be relying on the Marxist-Leninist groups, or even just the general left in those countries, to combat the national bourgeoisie once the imperial core is weakened, is a little hopeful.
Right, yeah, I was just thinking it's a leap of faith.
Huh. So if you're in a ML party that critically support or like uncritically supports Iran, like how do you combat that? Like if that's like the Dem sent decision, like how do you combat that in that party?
I mean, you got to use Dem sent to get them to change the line to critically to critical support.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not alienating certain groups. So
right. It's
actually inclusive of the ethnicities.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good spiel.
Yeah, it was a good spiel. Good for a spiel. It also
Shkoyak.
Yeah, Shkoyak, absolutely. This is going to be a recurring segment along with Evil Eye and what's coming up next. But yeah, that spiel will kind of function as a teaser for an episode we have coming up with an Iranian comrade who will discuss this in a lot, you know, this kind of issue in a lot more depth from the in the specific example of a Marxist-Leninist line on Iran. Okay, so we've done Evil Eye, we've done the spiel, and now it is time for not Hitler or Herzl, because we've sort of exhausted those as those options as like the entirety of the, you know, awfulness that is everyone's favorite game show. Have we settled on a name for this one? We were talking about it as like the HRH expanded universe. Talia,
yeah.
What else?
I'm cool with that. Yeah. HBH expanded universe.
Because the only other thing we had was like really long. It's like Protocols of the Elders of Zion or Literal Zionists. And that's just not.
And I'm not even using Protocols of Zion. I'm just going to pick. Basically, it's anti-Semite or Zionist.
There we go. Yeah, so I think
it could be the same too.
Right, exactly.
You can be an anti-Semitic
so yeah. Zionist. there's a lot of those, turns out. All right, so let's go with Hitler or Herzl Expanded Universe Edition. And Talia, you have the quote. So this is my first time as a player, and now I understand your hatred of this. I'm really nervous.
Yeah, I really. Okay. Okay, is this an anti-Semite, a Zionist, or both?
Oh God!
Is there an what?
You're giving us a both option.
Yeah. Let's go with a Goyish anti-Semite or a Zionist anti-Semite.
But Goyes can be Zionist.
Zionist too. Damn it! All these categories are breaking down.
Is there another people on Earth so emotionally twisted that they consider everything their nation does despicable and hateful, while every murder, rape, robbery committed by their enemies fill their hearts with admiration and awe?
Oh my God.
That's a Zionist.
I hate that my gut is screaming that's definitely a Jewish Zionist.
It is a labor Zionist.
Oh, fuck.
I was vague enough to be right.
I hate being correct. I hate it. Who was
that? That was Burl Katznelson from the 1930s.
Wait, from when?
The 1930s.
Mm. This is like that Larry David quote, I hate myself, but not because I'm Jewish.
Yeah. 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 I think about that a lot. That specific line. All right. Well, that's one quote. Oh God, it does hurt being on the receiving end of these. What do we got? What's our next one?
When we become rulers, we shall regard as undesirable the existence of any religion except our own, proclaiming one God with whom our fate is tied as the chosen people, and by whom our fate has been made one with the fate of the world. For this reason, we must destroy all other religions. If thereby should emerge contemporary atheists, then as a transition step, this will not interfere with our aims.
Oh, shit. Is this like a koofy douchebag, or is this a, like, Greater Israel Jewish nut job? Ah, fucking A.
I can't tell if that's a Zionist or if that's like a really weird Nazi.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's a reactionary Jew or Christian.
Because, like, I thought I was a Nazi until they mentioned atheist. And then I was like, well, if they're saying atheism, it's probably a Jew.
Do you want to know?
I'm gonna go with Jewish Zionist again.
I'm gonna go with Nazi. Let's cover our bases. Okay.
It is from the Protocols.
Oh. Fuck.
One more. Okay, he is hardly a Jew. I'm more of a Jew than he is. He doesn't belong to a synagogue. He doesn't support Israel. He's an enemy of Israel.
This is definitely a Christian. This is a goyish Zionist. That's my guess.
That's a Zionist.
It is Rudy Giuliani.
Ah, fucker. Talking about Bernie, no doubt.
No, he was talking about George Soros.
Oh, God.
Don't tell me I'm anti-Semitic if I oppose them. Soros is hardly a Jew. I'm more of a Jew than Soros is.
Just fucking God damn it. It hurts so bad.
How did I get Giuliani as a mayor?
I don't know.
You're in New York. I do know.
Yeah, but, like, there's so many Jews here. How do they not see through?
You get Mike Bloomberg.
Because there's a lot of class traitor Jews in New York.
I'm so tired.
The Jews are very tired. Mm-hmm. I am really interested in how this Bloomberg Bernie shit's going to go down.
Oh, someone kill me.
I'm interested in the Bernie Jew and the Bloomberg Jew.
Oh, God.
What a time to be alive.
They're right. woof.
I can't wait until I start seeing all the Bloomberg signs in Long Island, because now we're going to get all the really proud Jews actually going, like, we finally have a Jewish nominee.
Yep. Oh, God. Yeah, God, it is going to be, it's like either way we'll wind up with the first Jewish nominee, but it'll be either like horrible class traitor snake in the grass or, you know, squishy sock dem.
Yeah. even if that's
way too far. I think my favorite thing about the Bernie shit so far is when, like, I forget if it was Fox or some reactionary, you know, news outlet tried to interview Juan Guaido about Bernie, and Guaido like literally laughed about the idea of calling Bernie a socialist and was like, nah, in my country, he wouldn't be a socialist. And it's like, oh, holy shit. Like, this is just layers of ridiculousness. Just like,
boy, you really hate to see it.
Yeah. It's like that face when you realize that Bernie's policies are more in line with Guaido's than Maduro's, but also that America is trying to topple Maduro and put in a, like, Venezuelan Bernie in Venezuela, but won't allow a Bernie to exist in America. Like, just like, poof, head explosion.
Oh, Lord.
All right, so I think that round of, you know, gut-wrenching horror does it.
Do we have anything else that we want to get off our chest here before we wrap it up?
Just a cool history fact. India has one of the oldest Jewish populations in the world.
Yes. Like second only to like Baghdad and Palestine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually remember at one point trying to do some research on, there's like multiple distinct Indian Jewish populations, because some went there via Persian trade routes, like way, way the fuck back. And then there was a large Sephardi population that settled because they were like on Portuguese trade missions, but then were like, what if we just fucked off from Portugal because the Inquisition and just settled in India? And so like, I forget, is it the Cochin Jews or no? There's Jews in some city where they like, they divide themselves up into like the white Jews and the black Jews, and the black Jews are like, that's what they call themselves, where like the black Jews are the older, you know, more, more local and originally stemming from like Persian Jewish origins. And then the white Jews are like the Sephardi, runaways.
Cochin Jews.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Super, super fucking fascinating. I definitely want to read more like beyond just like, you know, blase internet research. Like I would love to find some like scholarly work about them. There's also the Kaifeng Jews in China. Which is another like really, really longstanding population, and also, you know, a great case study for why Zionists are wrong about Jews all being one nation, because if you
all line, Jews are white though.
I mean, that's what I hear, but you know,
God.
But yeah, like you line up a Beta Israel Ethiopian Jew and a Kaifeng Jew and me and my Moroccan Jewish neighbor, and like none of us look alike at all or have the same mother tongues or even practices besides like the very, very barest of basics. So fuck off, you Zionist shits flattening us all into one nation.
Right.
It's fucking ridiculous. But yeah, no, the Indian Jewish populations, any Jewish population that's spread out from like the Persian period, I find super, super interesting, because that was the first diaspora, and it went east, not west. There's also like really cool, distinct populations of Jews from the Persian period onward that settled in the Caucasus. So there's like the Georgian Jews.
Yeah, I think that might be one of the oldest.
Yeah.
Areas like where Stalin grew up.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you and guys then, know Anish Kapoor?
Hmm.
Anish Kapoor, the guy who did Vanta Black.
No.
So Anish Kapoor is like a sculptor artist. He invented this like, so like art has become this like physics.
The
black, like he made the blackest black or pinkest. He made pink.
Like the blackest black ever. That like,
he's an asshole.
He's an Indian Jew.
What? He's such a dick.
I know.
He put an IP on the. He put a copyright and stuff on the blackest black, so no other artist could use it.
I know.
Copyright system.
He also accepted the Genesis Prize that recognizes individuals who have attained excellence and international renown in their fields and whose actions and achievements express a commitment to Jewish values, the Jewish community, and wait for it, the State of Israel. So, yeah, AZAB, as always.
We gotta get patches or something with that on there.
Yeah, that is the only actual announcement that I have is like I have the week off because public school February break, and I'm going to spend a large chunk of this week like crunching the numbers to see what it will take to get Minion merch set up, and using our patron bucks to get like screens and figure out budgeting for like embroidery patch makers and whatnot, and figure out like what screens I could do individually versus like I have a few different friends who like run printmaking shops for like bands and whatnot. So that's going to be cool to get that going. And, you know, because like people on Twitter will accuse us of being petty bouge once we start selling
or
merchandise.
Not real.
Oh, we're yeah, not or we're not real. Oh, shit. How do we not? That was ridiculous. Yeah, so quick aside, in case you didn't see in the if you're not in the Discord yet, some chucklehead thinks that we are not real and we're quote unquote invented by Trolls of the Round Table to deflect from charges of anti-Semitism that only came out when we were on like episode 5. So like the charges of anti-Semitism, we're not going to get into, but apparently Trolls of the Round Table folks predicted the future and realized they would have to deflect from charges of anti-Semitism. And so invented Talia to come on for an episode and then further invented me and Tim and have now invented Prez. We're all inventions. We're all constructs.
It's all true.
We're all just golems summoned by by
Boys?
Ethan. Yeah, we're just goyish golems. That's all we are, you know. Apparently.
God, so crazy. That's how I knew, like, oh, we're getting under someone's skin.
Yeah, right. We're doing something right because we're making the like
conspiracy theory.
Yeah, the like anarchist, the like Antifa gritty crowd mad.
And I love Gritty, so
I know. I hate that he's been claimed by like the Black Flag crowd so thoroughly.
I will still wear my Gritty punching out Hitler shirt with pride.
It is really good. It is really good.
And I have a patch of Gritty holding an AK-47
that
I
will
wear
That's
with
dope.
Pride.
That's great. Maybe that'll be part of the merch line is like tanky Gritty merch.
Ooh. I'm not from Philly, so I feel, but I think Gritty is all of us.
Yeah. Right? Are we not all Gritty? All right.
Maybe Gritty's a golem.
Hell yeah. I don't know how much of this is going to stay in. We're going on like 10 tangents at once right now.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, let's land this plane. But yeah, so that's going to be something that we can put together coming down the line. So we got some merch that we'll be figuring out shortly, and we have some new episodes that we're trying to put together. One that we mentioned earlier about, you know, how to approach Iran as principled Marxist-Leninists. One that we're trying to put together with at least one Yiddish learner, if not fluent Yiddish speaker, about just like learning Yiddish as a counter-hegemonic act. We'd love to do more language episodes. So if you know anybody who is a Ladino speaker or who is like a Bukharan Jew who has kept alive the languages from Central Asia, or you know, an Arab Jew who's, you know, still has some like Judeo-Arabic hanging around in their family that they still speak. I know that's mostly been sadly pretty successfully suppressed by the Zionist project at this point. But if you know anybody who knows anything about these languages, even, we just want to have kind of a more informed discussion of various diaspora languages. And I think that's it for stuff we have like fully like organized that we're planning out right now. If you have any episode suggestions, please get in touch. As we said at the top of the episode, we now have a slew of new contact information. So our email is now minionpod, MINYANPOD, at gmail.com. Our Twitter is the_minion. Same for our Patreon, the_minion. The anchor is the-minion, because they don't do underscores, which is annoying. And yeah, I think that's it. Anything else before we close up?
I got nothing.
All right.
Just thank you, everybody, for being awesome. I love you.
Thank you to our smooches. Lovely patrons. So many smooches. And yeah, we'll see you all next time. Solidarity forever. Bye.
Bye.
Later.
Nevamu avathe delam gipamu aftam gipam varpathe adahmatosh homkhathe یکی شمالا بش برته یکی شاملی بش خورته یکی شره و قل بش برته یکی شایسحاق بش خورتم شیفرا ورثا یا نبار شیفرا ورثا یا نبار یا نیگه شیفرا بیارو و از مثیان ندارو یعنی گشی فرا بیارو خیلی یعنی